Hi, I'm Terry Meekin. Welcome to Roving Report. Today, we're off to the UK Space Agency to find out about Britain's new journeys into space. And I started off by meeting Matt Goodman, Head of Communications, and I asked him how the operation is set up.
We get about £350 million a year. Contrast that with somebody like NASA who gets £11.4 billion a year. And so we're working in a much more flexible, much more collaborative way with a lot of our partners.
So you've got £360 million a year coming in from central government.
That's right.
And what's the money spent on?
About $280 million of that goes to the European Space Agency, where we manage that fund on behalf of the UK government.
Are we giving it to Europe?
No, we're not giving it to Europe. Essentially, the money that we spend within the European Space Agency comes back into British industry. For every pound we spend with ESA, we get a pound back in contracts that come back to British companies and employ British staff.
Right, so that's part of the deal with ESA. You took £280 million out, at least £280 million back.
That's right.
Yeah. Over what period?
We put £280 million over a year, and every year £280 million should come back.
Does it?
At the moment, we're returned on about 0.99 of what we spend, and we're trying to get it back up and over one.
So the European Space Agency take this money from you, they take it from all the other governments in Europe, and then they decide, a council of wise men or technicians, say, right, we're going to do this. Now, what are they doing with the aggregated money at the moment to make use of it for space purposes?
Sure. So we have lots of different programs that run within the European Space Agency, and one of those is space science. That's the simplest or the most fundamental, I guess, to what we do. I don't know if you've seen any of the activity recently over the Gaia space telescope, which just went up. That's going to be creating a 3D map of the galaxy. Another that's come up this year is Rosetta, which is a mission out to a comet. And these are all funded through European Space Agency Science Program funding.
Now, these have been long-term missions in the planning for long-term, the Rosetta one especially.
Absolutely, yeah.
So have we been involved in that from the outset, or we jumped on board?
No, from the very beginning.
Right.
So, back from the late 90s, whenever Rosetta was conceived, and straight through till today, whenever there's the rendezvous with the comet.
And it's the land on the comet, I believe, isn't it?
That's right. There's a lander that comes down, and there's an orbiter that goes around the comet as well to pick up information.
So the £280 million that we put into that project this particular year, who's got the benefit of that in the UK? What companies are getting the money back?
A couple of the companies. One of them is now part of the Airbus group, Airbus Space and Defence. It used to be Astrium. Manufactured both the platform for that and did some of the propulsion work.
So when you've got a project like Rosetta and you've got your £280 million in the pot out there, is there a financial manager making sure that it comes back to British companies at least that one?
That's right. Yeah, we do that management for the UK.
Now, do you find that there's a competition for your £280 million? How do you divvy the cake up and make sure it comes into the best overall European brains?
This is where we have a great UK space industry who's working with us. We've got some real credible businesses here in the UK who have a long history of being able to provide good technology for both European missions and for UK missions as well. Now, we do have other companies around Europe that are telling the same story and trying to do the same sort of things, but we've got a very flexible and very astute UK industry that can make those kinds of decisions and build a good business case for why they should be the ones getting the work.
So when there's several hands trying to grab the money out the till, who makes a decision? Who's the guy who says, right, it's going to go to France, it's going to go to Europe, or this particular astronaut?
Well, we have program boards at the European Space Agency level that make those decisions.
Now, we've got £100 million left over, the £360 million or £80 million left over per annum coming in. What's that spent on?
Well, a large chunk of our budget this year has gone to the reaction engines. That's for developing a new engine technology, which uses a blend of both rocket and turbine technology to hopefully revolutionize the way we access space.
Funny you should say that. I actually visited Alan Bonn earlier this month, and might be worthwhile listening to what he's got to say about his engine.
What we have is a design for a very, very powerful engine, one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, aerospace engines ever conceived.
So Skylon, for the listener's sake, is the British space shuttle. Using your engine is a propulsion system.
It's a very sleek, rather sexy-looking, fast aeroplane in configuration. Mm. But the important thing is it takes off like an aeroplane, flies into space, does a job, comes back, and then a couple of days later it can do it again. And various parts of the technology of that have had to undergo development. We've deliberately designed the engine to capitalise on as much existing rocket and jet engine technology as possible, but nonetheless you can't get away with everything. There are some new things that we've had to do, and we've spent the past few years consolidating those technologies. We're now in the position where all of the relevant technologies for this engine exist. We've shown that not only do they exist, but they're extremely practical. So,
but you've built a demonstrator, I believe.
We've built some demonstration technology in form of extremely powerful, lightweight heat exchangers. A heat exchanger that can move as much heat as a nuclear power station heat exchanger, but only having the weight of something weighing a ton or so in weight. With these engines, they have this big cooler in front of them. Otherwise, they don't look very different from a jet engine. As the engine accelerates up past the speed of Mach 2.5, then the cooler starts to remove the heat from the air. And so it keeps the inlet temperature to the engine very cold, about minus 150 degrees C. And by cooling the air to that, all sorts of things that you can do on the engineering of the engine become possible, including stitching the rocket engine and the jet engine into a single power plant. We know all this is possible. Do we get the funding into it? That's the one single question in almost anything that we ever do in Britain, is how do I find the money to do it?
So how much money do you need at this point in time in order to get an engine attached to an aircraft?
Well,
in its simplest form.
The actual total cost of the programme is about £10 billion, and it's certainly a lot less money than, for example, the HS2 train project. We need about £360 million to go from where we stand today to getting a full prototype engine actually onto a testbed and up and running.
That was Alan Bond of Reaction Engines speaking to me earlier this month. Why has it taken so long for the UK to recognise that here is a guy who's got an engine which effectively can revolutionise launch characteristics? One plane, one engine, up and down in the same day.
We've been working with Alan with Reaction Engines for several years, and we provided a bit of seed funding for him in the early 2000s to make sure that they had the right technical expertise to take their engine technology forward. We've gotten to the stage now where they need a certain amount of funding to get their engine off the ground, if you can excuse the pun. They have proven to us that they know and have reached the sort of level of technical development where we think they can develop a commercial
engine. What did they have to do to prove that to you?
There's a series of engine tests and pre-cooler technology tests that we've been working with them to try and build up the right data set for, and some of that has been the testing runs that they have done over the last couple of years. But we've also commissioned the European Space Agency and their propulsion guys to test that and verify that data that Alan's been collecting and building up. So we put together a report 2 or 3 years ago now with Reaction Engines and the European Space Agency on the viability of the engine technology.
£10 billion will get a new design aircraft into space using his engine, and he says it could be done within the next 5 or 6 years. Now, he's a private company. He's out there putting an engine together. Mm. Is there anybody in the UK Space Agency who says, we want to have a British space shuttle in space by year 2025, and we'll make sure that it happens, and we will tell all these people like Alan, get a move on, don't hang about, and spit out the other contracts like the building of the airframe, so we actually get it to happen, rather than let it happen by experimenters and engineering and data sets collection. In other words, get the focus of things, say, we want this in space by this particular point in time.
The way we work is we work with industry and with the private sector to try and get these projects off the ground. At the moment, our investment of $60 million sort of hopefully will unlock some private investment as well and give Alan the flexibility to be able to pursue the technology that he needs. Because you don't want a government department dictating terms to a scientist or an engineer, I suppose. And so what
No, but it's almost like a national infrastructure project where you do need the government. You've got so many people competing. I mean, Alan, I should imagine, will be content to sort of keep his engine in development forever and ever and ever, because that's what developers do. They never get it ready in time. It's always tomorrow I can do something better, But if somebody says, look, get the damn thing in the air by this amount of time, because nobody's even thought about putting out the Skyline, which is the airframe project, to anybody yet, have they?
No, not yet. What we need to do first, though, is make sure that the engine technology is right. And that's the big revolutionary piece of kit.
But you've done that already, haven't you?
The technology's there, but we need to build a working bench model of the engine, which is essentially what our $60 million will help unlock. So once that that bench model of the engines there, well, you could sell that on to just about anybody who wanted to build an airframe. And so what we need to be thinking about now is how we convert that investment in the engine technology into sales for British industry and how we create new jobs here in the UK.
But if that engine is having £60 million seed money put into it, why can't the space agency take a view that this is going to happen? Why wait for it to be serialised and then say, okay, 5 years down the time when we see the engine does work, we'll start the process off about building an airframe. Why not do the two things simultaneously?
Well, the tricky thing about the airframe is that it has to be built to a specific weight and a specific power distribution from the engine. And this is the problem that we ran into with HOTOL in the 1980s.
Yes, but that was only because they put the engines at the back, and the center of gravity moved about, and they had that crap, but the British government pulled the plug on it because they didn't have any money. But if we assume that they've now got it right, and then they've got the design right, and there might be some iteration done, I still come back to the point, why are we waiting for 10 years when we could be waiting for 5 if you kick the two things off at the same time?
Well, that's probably more of a question for Alan. I think he'd be more comfortable getting the engine right before he started on the airframe. But he's he knows his stuff.
But
he's been around for quite a long time.
Wouldn't necessarily be Alan who's going to do the airframe. I mean, you've got British Aerospace. Mm. You've got other people in this country who are probably better qualified, perhaps, to build airframes than engines. I mean, Alan's an engine manufacturer. Mm-hmm.
And we've started some discussions around where that airframe might be built. And so those conversations are ongoing, but I think a lot of companies are waiting to see what the outcome of the engine tests are before they start working on the airframe itself. So that's the piece of kit that is incredibly revolutionary and very exciting for us.
But it's going to come. I mean, it is going to come. So an airframe will be required, and I'll just leave it at the point that it does seem to me an unnecessary British trait to wait to make sure all the bells and whistles are covered before you actually, take a choice on it, I mean, if Kennedy said we're going to put a man on the moon in 10 years, then he put a date on it, and everybody focused on it. Yeah. If he said, well, we'll wait till somebody's finished this and somebody's finished that.
No, and it does seem like a long process, but this is a piece of technology and a revolutionary piece of engine work that nobody in the world's been able to do yet. And I think we want to make sure we get it right and keep that here in Britain and creating British jobs.
Why not highlight that reaction engine project as the UK beginning to develop a British space shuttle? It makes it much more easy to understand because you've got the history of the space shuttle in the USA. People can plug into the back of all that.
Well, and we've had some really interesting pieces in the press about it, and there's a lot of enthusiasm for the project, which is great. What I like about the Skylon project and about the Sabre engine as a whole is that it's not just about a space shuttle. It's about doing just lots of different types of things.
Now, what's always happened in the past, your present action accepted, although I do know you're British, is that as soon as we get anything off the ground, we lose it to the Americans. Other things that we've invented that have leaked out of this country, but how are we going to make sure it remains in our own intellectual control?
Well, that's a really important point, and that's one of the reasons why we've put this $60 million in. David Willetts, the Minister for Universities and Science, is very much committed to keeping this project here in the UK and not doing the same thing that we did with the jet engine. And it's a fantastic opportunity for us to put a marker down in the sand and say, like, this is a British piece of kit, and it will be, and it will continue to be built here in Britain.
I think the taxpayer and the average person in the street would be absolutely astounded if we don't learn the lessons of history. And you should say the jet engine.
Absolutely.
And the poor guy, a bit like Alan Bond, I suppose, ploughing a lonely furrow for years and years and years. And politics and business screwed it up in the end. And effectively, he ended up in America working over there all the time. Mm-hmm. But do you find at the moment that people are coming to you with dual motives? They're coming saying, well, we wouldn't mind to have a look at this and maybe we'll put some money into it, but actually they're coming over to try and get some of the trade secrets.
Well, it's an important balance to strike. What we have are a lot of companies wanting to invest in the UK now that they see that we're growing our sector and that we're adding new jobs and we're adding new work in. So you see some companies wanting to come in and be part of that. And those companies that are willing to commit, create jobs here in the UK and base themselves here, we're more than willing to talk to them and help them get settled and set here in the UK to be part of a growing sector. What we don't want to see are people coming into the UK and turning around and not being able to stay with it and be part of it.
So we put £60 million into this engine, which will take us into space. What monitoring are we doing to make sure that the next stages get delivered on time?
Well, we've got a program management team here in the UK Space Agency that are managing that program with reaction engines and working with them to make sure that they've got the right sort of timelines and milestones. We think that the new launch technology will be worth about £40 billion to the world economy. And so we'd like to grab at least 10% of that and get about another $4 billion back into the UK economy as part of, with the reaction engines and the Sabre.
Where do you think the finance is going to come from in order to achieve a plane off the ground? Because it's not going to come from UK government.
It's a hope of ours that we'll get UK industry involved. And there are several different conversations ongoing at the moment that aren't necessarily just UK industry, but worldwide industry as well. We're seeing a lot of global investment coming into the UK. And what we want to make sure is that we're finding the right investors that will keep the work here in Britain.
Follow the money. I mean, who has got the money nowadays? perhaps trained bankers how to make rocket engines.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you've got the Chinese. I mean, a lot of companies are actually busting. The more the years go by, the more the countries you see are actually running out of money. But there are, you know, there are some with a little bit of money left in it. So I presume you're quite agnostic as to where the money comes from. If it's got a political system which we don't agree with, particularly in the West, are we quite happy to take their money and say, look, as long as we've got all the checks and balances and you don't steal the technology, which is difficult, we don't mind where the money comes from?
Well, it's a commercial decision by a lot of companies, and some of the investment opportunities, I think, are going to come from private venture capitalists institutional capital who are working at a slightly higher level than some of the small venture capitalists who have been working with reaction engines to date. So they've raised about $12 million themselves, and now they're looking to take it to the next stage. So it's going to involve bigger institutions.
So I've got a big pile of money in my suitcase over here, and you come to me and say, like, I want you to invest in this particular engine and this technology because we're going to put a space shuttle in space, it's going to be British. Has anybody done a business plan all the way through with a stand scrutiny to say what return they're going to get on their investment over what period?
Yeah, we've worked with Reaction Engines, and Reaction Engines have commissioned a few reports. I think it was PricewaterhouseCoopers who did the ultimate business case for Reaction Engines, but it was a useful exercise and very interesting for them to sit down and talk through the options.
So you're leaving it basically to Reaction Engines to go out and get this money. Are you actually going out with the UK government umbrella and saying to people, look, you know, we've got a guy down here busy beavering away getting this engine ready to go into space, but he's going to need some extra money, and you talk to institutional investors?
We've been involved in all of the conversations to date that have been working with Reaction Engines. We've been trying to help and identify opportunities for them, and we've working with the UK Trade and Investment, UKTI, who handle our overseas trade and exports, and they're the ones who are finding some really good opportunities for us as well.
Joe Public tends to think there's so many satellites in space, they're falling into each other now. So why are we creating more of hardware when there's been 30 or 40 years of space hardware already up there? Too much, perhaps?
Well, we're trying to manage the number of satellites that are up there through our work with the United Nations. And one of the commitments that we've made is that any satellite that we launch has to have a license. And that part of that license is that satellite has to come down after 25 years at a maximum. What we don't have is a way to manage some of the debris that's up there. And that's one of the really interesting problems that's going on in the space sector at the moment.
So there's satellite. A market for a Dyson vacuum cleaner in space.
Absolutely,
British industry.
If James Dyson wants to come up with a...
But there's a need for something like that.
Sure.
And therefore, it will fulfill a market need.
Absolutely, yeah.
If one could consider some technology to do it.
If we've got some listeners out there that are going to come up with some great technology to help us manage space debris, we'll be more than happy to talk to them about it.
You're in charge of this now. I've promoted you to the top of the tree.
Fantastic.
I've given you unlimited money.
Great.
What would you do to make sure that some of the things that you think should be done would be done?
Well, one of the really fascinating, interesting things that we're doing at the moment, and I think we could do more of, is we've got a British astronaut, part of the European Space Agency's astronaut corps, going up to the International Space Station in a couple of years. And Tim Peake is his name. He's a really neat guy, former Apache pilot and Army Air Corps. He's just a genuinely nice guy and doing a really great job for the European Space Agency, but also for Britain on an international level. The fascinating thing would be, where do we go next? Tim's got a great opportunity to study how we live and work in orbit through the International Space Station. But beyond that, where do we start to explore next? So are we going to Mars? Are we going to look at the moons of Saturn or of Jupiter and learn a bit more about the rest of our solar system? If I had unlimited money and unlimited resources, I'd start putting together and thinking about where we go.
The thing about that, it's putting the target further out. You've got this engine which we can get something into space in the next 10 years if we focused on that. You know, it's like saying, I want to build a Rolls Royce at the stage of the Model T Ford, which hasn't yet been built. So we want to put the Model T Ford together first and then evolve to those other ones. But if we jump over that intellectually, we're not actually getting this project finished.
Well, which is why we're doing the work that we are doing with Skyline at the moment. So that takes time to get built and get right. But at the same time, we can be thinking about how we live and work in orbit, which is what Tim's doing via the International Space Station. And we're also working with a lot of other space agencies around the world to get together a roadmap on how we reach the rest of our solar system. It's called the International Space Exploration Working Group. They put together a roadmap on where we can, as a human race, collaborate to try and get to the outer edges of our solar system and how we do that and what we do next, I guess. And so everybody's working and pulling in the same direction through all the space agencies around the world.
So you don't find duplication of effort. You find that there is either a synergy or a controller somewhere who's actually saying, look, Mr. Chinaman, you do this. Mr. Indian guy, you do this. Mr. America, you do that. So effectively, there's a sum of parts, or do you find that you're overlapping because you're
trying to develop the same things? Working together. We are part of the committee that makes those decisions. And again, it's about putting a committee. And at some point, maybe the committee will get to Mars or will get to to Titan. But that's one of the great things about space and about the space sector is that we do work really collaboratively and try and find a way to do things together and not work at cross purposes. And that's one of the things that makes the British space sector so unique in the world is that we don't have a NASA. We're not dictating terms to anybody. And we're not doing what, say, you know, China is or Germany or France is, where they have a single national organization that only does one thing and does it well. What we're doing is working with British industry and British academics and the general public as well, using their enthusiasm to try and find something new and interesting for Britain to be able to contribute to the rest of the world as well. But we're doing it together, and we're working together to try and achieve it. We want to make sure that there's a Union flag on the next rover that goes to
Mars. And
then
it'll work. We don't want to hear, Swindon, we have a problem.
Exactly. Whenever we do put the next rover on Mars, it's going to have a Union flag on it. It's being built over in Stevenage. British built, and it's British designed. Whenever it goes to Mars in 2018, it's going to be a great way for us to tell the story of British ingenuity paving the way for the next stage of European space exploration.
The other thing that came to the public's attention not so long ago was the need to have an early warning of an Earth collision system. Where does UK Space Agency have involvement with that?
We have a near-Earth object report, which we publish every month for particular bits of the government. We monitor those regularly, and we make sure that if there's anything that needs to be seen or tracked, we do that with our international partners and with the teams here in the UK. So we've got that facility here in the house. The more points of data you've got for near-Earth objects, the better your prediction can be of what their track is. Because at the moment, if you look at them from one spot on the Earth, and you only see that one spot, it's very difficult to judge where it's traveling, how it's traveling, and if it's traveling right at.
Even though there are these warning systems, there's two or three come out of the blue recently. You know?
Well, the tricky thing is when they come out of the sun, because then you don't see them. Because at the moment, the way we track them is by seeing the point of light and the light that they reflect off of the sun. And you use that reflection of light to judge how it's traveling, how fast it's traveling, and where it's going. So when it comes out of the sun, it becomes a much more difficult thing to track, because it doesn't reflect at us, it reflects back at the sun.
And has there been any intellectual thinking on how you're going to deal with it when it happens?
There's been a lot of thinking about it. There's ideas like gravity tractors, different types of attitude adjustment, so ways you could use
this,
sun's radiation, or being able to pull it away from the dangerous orbits that might impact the Earth.
There were a couple of technologies mooted for interplanetary travel some time ago, and I don't know whether they've completely been taken off the table. There was a controlled atomic explosion where you had almost like mini atomic bombs actually moving these things forward. And then there's using the solar wind, the plasma sails, and that. Is anything in British industry taking up those?
There's a NASA mission called Sunseeker, I believe, which is testing a solar sail, which has some British technology on it. It's been built by British. There's a British kit on there. And there is research ongoing here in the UK about how we use atomic engines for interstellar travel. We're still looking at that and looking at the ways that we can help.
What can we tell the public about that? Do we know how, is it in the public domain, how they would operate?
They're still being developed, the engine technology, so I don't think we can talk about them too much. Until the researchers are able to talk about those, I wouldn't want to second guess them.
Computer, he say no.
No, I'm not. No computer. Yeah, they're very interesting bits of kit, and the guys who are doing the science on those are really, really intelligent people, and I expect we'd probably see some good results from them. So,
well, summing up then, Matt, what would you say is the mission statement? That sounds like a good word in the context of our interview, but sure. What's the mission statement of UK Space Agency?
So the UK Space Agency is there to help lead and grow the UK space sector. At the moment, we contribute about £9 billion to the economy. We employ about 30,000 jobs directly by the UK space sector, and we enable another 60,000 jobs. So our ambition is to keep that growing and to capture even more of the world space market. So at the moment, we control about 6%, and we're hoping to capture about 10% by 2030, which we project will be a £40 billion market, and at that time, we expect it to be about a £4 billion UK space sector. So we've got a lot of ambition, we've got a lot of momentum, and we're hopefully going to get into orbit here as quick as we can.
That was Matt Goodman of the UK Space Agency giving us an insight into Britain's industrial march into space. And for a final word on the subject, let's return to Alan Bond, inventor and builder of the British Sabre engine that will take us into space on a daily basis.
If we introduce something like Skylon into operation and make it as easy to get into space as it is for, say, a trip to Paris, then even with my imagination, I believe we cannot see what the ultimate end product of all of that would be. It will lead to changes in the way that we live, the changes in the way that we work, the changes in the way that we get our materials, and indeed, ultimately, of course, off-Earth communities living. So that's something that moves into the realm of speculation, science fiction. But the important thing is we are taking the genuine first steps of that today.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on a Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore.
You've been listening to Rovin Report, where this week we've been at the UK Space Agency and Reaction Engines. Rovin Report is a Terry Meekin production.